Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Download the Cliff Central app. Available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Murray to Henderson. Slips another tackle. Henderson's going here. Murray in once more. Here comes Henry. Supported by Best. Everyone supported by Best. Will Best get the try? Still playing. Murray has to be scored either way now. Murray's got it. Foot of the post. Stayed aware. And Ireland there in that moment proved they have a game to worry anybody.
Absolutely fantastic from Ireland. Brilliant carries. Henderson, O'Brien, Henry, Conor Murray at the back of it, finishing off the try, but brilliant, brilliant work from Ireland.
That's it. That's it. That is, the pool stage is done. And Ireland, well, Ireland with the big result from the weekend, which means they avoid the All Blacks, which is the, I suppose, first and foremost goal of that group. Welcome to it, the next edition of Rugby Central. It is the knockout stages that we're going into right now. And that means that it's down to the business, well, start of the business, really. If you're going to listen to any of the cliches coming out of the post-match press conferences, it is that the job starts now. So, really nice action-packed show today because we've got a lot of stats for you today. Now, I'm not just bringing in stats because I've run out of things to say. We're bringing in stats to kind of just put a little bit of context into what the pool stages have brought us. It has been very interesting so far, this Rugby World Cup. Stats are basically things that make you do sound quite intelligent with your mates. So if you do want to wow them with a couple of things, let's kick off with a couple. The attendance so far, and let's try to do this without being like Jacob Zuma, 1,881,023. That is the attendance so far with the games. The points scored, well, has been 2,020 points. That works out, if you divide that by 40, basically 51 points per match. And they've been very, very exciting games. Very, very few no-try contests. I think just the one, actually. And that took place over the weekend, which we'll get to in a bit. 231 tries. Some of them very, very exciting. Very, very good tries. Conversions, 164. Drop goals, just 3. So the guys really are rolling the dice in attack here. All you want to see. And penalties scored, 176. So more tries than penalties. And more people than I think would ever watch the Currie Cup for the last 20,000 years. It has been an exciting Rugby World Cup, and we did say so from the start. So, to give you an idea of what's coming up in the show today, well, we're going to get through all the latest results and what they all mean. We're going to quickly look at the final standings of the pools, and then we chatted to Keith Moore today. Now, Keith's the guy I chatted to before in previous podcasts I've done on another station. He is a very, very insightful guy living in London, and of course, we want to get some like word on the ground, so to speak. So Keith's going to join us and just kind of get a little more context to how the teams have finished, what we're looking forward to going into the quarterfinals, and then itself the quarterfinals. We've got four amazing matchups. Barring Japan maybe being in there, you couldn't ask for better games right now. I think the way they're set up and how they're being played, it is going to be such an exciting weekend. And it's kind of cool to see where all the teams are, because we've all had relatively easy pools, except for maybe Pool A. So those teams have been thrashing the crap out of each other, whereas South Africa's had a much easier run, as have New Zealand. So it'll be interesting to see now when it gets to the crunch, if it's going to be beneficial or detrimental to have those runs. And all the answers shall be revealed. So this time next week, we're going to be much wiser as rugby fans. So just a kind of preempt on that, we can give you all the details. If you want to get in touch with us today, well, if you want to chat to us, the number is 0861-555-189. Of course, if you're listening to this on podcast, that number doesn't apply because we're doing the live show now, but you're listening to record it, obviously. On Twitter, just tweet me at followthebounce. Anything you want to talk about, just get it up there. Or if you want to chat to us on the WeChat, just chat to us on the official Cliff Central page. All messages will come up on the screen, and I will hopefully get to them through the course of the show. So let's get into it. It was a really, really great weekend of rugby. England, of course, they were really out of it. But, yeah, they still play. They still play in front of a passionate home crowd base. And it's just so good to see. I think there's been so many different sort of stories coming out of this World Cup. And one of them is that rugby really is. It's like the kind of sport you want to, you know, you want to bring home to your mother. You're not going to bring football home. Cricket also has its dodgy seedier sides. American sports don't make sense. And as for the Olympics, well, with all the corruption, it's just very much like FIFA. Rugby, on the other hand, what a great sport. What great spirit has been shown. The amount of teams that have been clapping each other off on the field, the sportsmanship, and just the fans. And it's not because the booze is cheap at Rugby World Cup. Far from it, you know, with the English pound being what it is. Everyone is having a great time. People are making friends all over the place. The spirit has been so good from start to finish. And I think it'll only get better as these games get more and more tense. So just to get into that first match, New Zealand from the weekend, it was their final run out before they got into the knockouts. And yeah, they still haven't really, really been tested. And brushing Tonga aside 47-9 showed again that, you know, the team's got everything it possibly needs, but can it kind of kick on to the next level? Well, they haven't needed to, and they haven't opposition in order to do that. It's one thing saying, you know, you're only as good as the people you're playing against, but the thing is, you'll never test certain aspects unless your opposition will match you. We saw it with the USA versus SA. There's nothing really going to be tested from the box there because the US team was so weak. Then one of the weekend's big clashes was Samoa versus Scotland. Now, we all knew going into this one that Samoa had to win so that Japan could possibly get through at the expense of Scotland. Now, Japan were kind of the tournament favorites the moment they beat South Africa. I think that was everyone's second team, and there was so much excitement around those guys, and rightly so. They achieved something that was really quite spectacular. So the Samoa game, well, Samoa came out firing. This is a team that's disappointed throughout the World Cup so far. They've really been, I don't know what the problem is, whether it's just they haven't got the player mix right or they just haven't got quite the motivation that you would think. Because before the tournament, they hosted New Zealand in a midweek match, and the intensity and the flair and the commitment they played with was really, really encouraging. You looked at that and you thought, well, here's a team that actually really challenged the All Blacks today. Surely they're going to do well in Pool B. Wasn't to be, though. They came out on Saturday firing, but they just couldn't quite hold their composure, which is always the big problem with the Samoans, eventually going down 36-33 to Scotland. That their captain Laidlaw scored a try, and that was that. Scotland's big moment, because they are going to be so battered and bruised today. As I said earlier on the Gareth Cliff show during the sport this morning, if these guys still aren't in ice baths, I'll be massively surprised. Every single hit coming in on these guys was just fast, furious, hard, and you could feel it just sitting watching in your lounge. So Scotland go through on the back of that victory. The next game was Australia versus Wales. Now, there was so much to look into this match because, again, the incentive to finish these pools has been so huge. So if you look at Pool A, they're obviously going to go against Pool B. So the loser will play the winner of Pool B and vice versa. So Australia unbeaten, Wales unbeaten going into this one. Wales, of course, with the huge injury worries, so much so that they play star players out of position. George North being a major example of that. And he just looked a bit blunt as an attacking option, whereas he's normally so devastating. They had to bring in Anscombe, that Kiwi guy at the back, and he definitely didn't make much of an impact. And then forward-wise, well, these guys are fit, they're passionate. You'll always hear about the fact that they're trained in freezing temperatures, and they're trained in the desert, and they're up for anything, and they're well-coached, and they're passionate. But still, the game plan just wasn't right. They couldn't breach the Aussie defense. Even when the Shackle Dragons were down to 13 players, for about 7 or 8 minutes, they had a two-man advantage. Wales just could never stretch the defenses. Dan Biggar missed his first kick of the tournament as well. So a pretty disappointing day for Wales all round. They lost that one 15-6. Australia obviously would have preferred having Michael Hooper playing for them. He was suspended for the game. But yeah, his understudy, some 21-year-old guy, he was incredible. So no major gap there. But one big worry for Australia coming to this one, you might see a gif going around on Twitter of Pocock kneeing a Welsh guy in the chest. Admittedly, the Welsh guy was being a bit of a dick. He was holding Pocock back at a ruck. And if you're ever playing against Pocock, you know, if you can isolate that guy and minimize his ability to slow down your ball or create quick ball for the opposition, he's a go-to target. So this guy was holding him back, and then Pocock retaliated by just kneeing him in the sternum. It looked bloody sore. So whether that one finds a sighting commission or not, it definitely found the Twitter sighting commission last night, and many people were outraged at it. Final game from that day, of course, was the Saturday match. It was England 60-3 over Uruguay. Uruguay are essentially an amateur team, one of the few remaining in world rugby at the World Cup. And England put in, I think it was 10 tries in total, veteran eighth man Nick Easter scoring a hat-trick. So it was always going to be this way. I think the most important thing to take out of this match was that England still had fans after the dismal campaign they had. Mike Brown, the talented and massively outspoken fullback, he kind of wrote one of those open letters. Now, this is one of those things you do in the internet. It's a very sort of in vogue thing to do. Well, I tell you what, he actually made some really, really good points, and I think something should come out of this. Now, what normally happens when players speak out, they normally get dropped, because people don't want their authorities being challenged, especially coaches who are feeling a bit insecure right now. So, and look, before the match, there was the whole thing about the assistant coaches not being allowed in the tunnel. So England aren't exactly in a really good space right now, but Mike Brown came out and he just cut through all the crap. And he said that, you know, it wasn't from a lack of effort, a lack of trying. It's just that they're not good enough and need to work out what is going to make them better and what's going to make them better in each position. He said, you know, the cold reality is that many guys in the English team wouldn't even make the Lions team right now, let alone a World 15. So good on you, Mike Brown. I hope these words don't get you into hot water, because, I mean, if you look at the stats of line breaks or meters gained, all that kind of stuff, Mike Brown was one of the stars of the tournament, despite playing so little. So yeah, crushing result, losing to Wales, then losing to Australia. So this Uruguay game was just basically a way of saying thanks to the fans, but we'll have to come back next time. Interesting enough, the South Africans have now taken over the home base for the English. English, of course, had the best facilities, the pick of the bunch. Because it's quite nice when you do set yourself up in a small country like this. You don't really have to like move around a lot. So you can have a central base, and then you just bus it to the various grounds. So South Africa are going to be in England's snazzy base. I just hope the trend of losing doesn't get onto them from there. Other matches from the weekend, catch up on again. Argentina 64, Namibia 19. Now, Argentina have been running amok in this group of theirs. They came so close against New Zealand, and then they just blown away every single Minnow Nation away from that. They've got some exciting back. They're scoring some really, really great tries. So much so that they rank really highly in the stats. Now, we'll get to those later in the show after we chat to Keith. Another match that was very entertaining and rather close, a little bit too close for Italy. That was Italy's 32-22 win over Romania. Romania, of course, had a slight chance of trying to beat Italy there and then finishing third in the pool. Now, if you finish third in the pool for this World Cup, it means you automatically qualify for the next World Cup, which is obviously a very cool thing. It takes away that whole rigmarole of having to qualify and playing dodgy countries and dodgy places. So, which then brought us up to the big game of the Sunday, which was Ireland against France. Now, this was always going to be seen as a very tight duel. France, generally pretty good in World Cups, even though, you know, you never know France what they really want to do, because they keep changing. There's no real continuity. We all know that their local domestic league has been very sort of overrun with foreigners, which is good for the teams, obviously, if you look at title success, but not great for developing local talent. So they came into this one quite tightly matched. Ireland weren't very convincing against Italy whatsoever, but many people say don't judge that result. They're saving it all for the game against France so they can top the pool. And boy, did they do just that. They lost Johnny Sexton quite early on. Those Frenchies were just targeting him from the start with just large, really, really big hits on him. All legal though, so good for them. They then lost Paul O'Connell just before half time. He went down on an absolute heap, and at his age, when you go down on a heap, you don't often bounce back. So suddenly they had their two star players out. The captain and their fly-off were gone. They went into the break 9-6 up against the French. I think, who knows what the French really, really wanted out of this match. Saint-André, the coach, said that, you know, they don't obviously want to lose, but they're playing New Zealand now, and such is their fate. I'm going to guess the fact that they didn't seem too bothered at halftime. They're like, you know what, if it's not going to go our way, we're not going to cry about it. Because Ireland then powered on, even with having to lose two players. Then they lost a third player. They lost their flank as well. And they went out and they won that one 24-6. So Ireland topped that pool. And, it's fully deserving of that. But the interesting thing about that is that, sure, they topped the pool. But now they've got Argentina. Now, if you were going to this World Cup, you were going to say, right, who are the real challengers going to knock it around? You would say Argentina perhaps would be there, but they wouldn't be like the major, major teams. You know, it wouldn't be the big, big threat. But everything about this Argentinian team looks really, really strong right now. We all know that when it comes to the World Cup, they were pretty strong the last time they was played there in 2007, okay? They beat France twice, ended up finishing third. I think this is a real danger team, and I think that I wouldn't be surprised if both Ireland and France bow out this weekend. I know that sounds quite strong, especially after Ireland was so spirited, but the thing is, they dug so deep to get everything out of that French match. They're now going to probably be without Sexton, definitely without O'Connell. And now they're playing the Argentinian team with, well, no pressure whatsoever, but so much momentum. And of course, they've got a great, great scrum. You got a great scrum, it's worth its weight in gold in this tournament, and everything comes from that. So, wow, well into Ireland for winning that group. Whether it's going to be the easier game, well, sure. You know, obviously you don't want to play the All Blacks, but Argentina, wow. Tough group. Anyway, USA, Japan was the final game. We all knew that USA, they sort of saved their players for this game. They wanted to win the one World Cup game. Japan, other ideas, though, they were a much stronger side, Japan. They're always going to win this one. 10 points the difference in the end there. And that means that Japan sadly go out. It's a real shame, really, because they were deserving, far more deserving, you think, after Scotland. Yes, Scotland did beat them quite heavily in the pool, but they'd just beaten the box. To maintain, like, the big result after such a huge win like that, wow, near impossible. So Japan, they do finish third. Obviously, they do qualify for next World Cup because they're hosting it. But, yeah, if they can just work on this, make the progress, and go from strength to strength, this is one hell of a rugby nation on the rise here. Yes, they will rely on foreigners. But which country doesn't nowadays? I think it's just Argentina and South Africa and... not the All Blacks. Argentina and South Africa are the two strongest as far as fielding people born in their own country. It's just the beast who wasn't born in SA. Every Argentine was born in Argentina. So, good on Japan. Good on Eddie Jones, who now leaves to go be the Stormers coach / maybe England if the opportunity comes up. Right, so we're going to chat to Keith about the quarterfinals. But let's just get into the stats first of the pool stages. A lot happened, and yes, you might say that stats really don't make a big difference going into the pool stages or coming out of the pool stages, because some guys had easier games, some people had much harder games. Sure, granted, but let's just go through it anyway, because it's nice to see who the stars are going forward, and especially if rugby is a first-time thing for you, people often start watching sport during World Cup, so we can't sort of sideline them. So if you are a rugby fan through and through and you find the stats quite superfluous, well, bear with me for a second. Let's start with the players themselves, right? Tries. Brian Abana, Julian Sevier on fire, 5 each. Yes, they had some easier run-ins against teams like the USA and teams like Namibia and Tonga and those kind of people. But still, it's all about finishing, and those guys are top of the pile, 5 each. DTH, Van der Merwe. DTH, that just sounds something very, very crude. Anyway, DTH better than DTF. Anyway, he had 4, the South African-born Canadian winger. He also had the most meters gained as a runner in the World Cup, so good for him, because Canada were on, well, they finished bottom of their pool, so they're on many, many losing cause. But DTH, good on you, man. 4 tries. Gareth Davies from Wales, JP Peterson, and Nehe Mulner-Scudder from New Zealand all had 4. And then there's 10 players who scored 3 tries so far. When it comes to points, the Scottish captain, Greg Laidlaw, he is the highest scoring guy in the World Cup so far. He'll play one more match, though, so look for him to fall off this list quite shortly. As is our... Let me try to take a deep breath and pronounce this properly. Ariyumu Goriamru. Okay, I've completely butchered that. Goramaru. He is the Japanese guy. He did so well. Of course, his World Cup campaign's out of the way, though. It's all done. 58 points for him. And then Bernard Foley, the Aussie guy, 56 points. He is now the favorite to finish on top, because Australia, I reckon they are going straight to the finals. That team, there's so much in reserve that we haven't seen yet from the Aussie team. And they got great replacements as well. Defenders beaten. Now, the reason I did want to bring up the stats before we get into the chat with Keith is that, obviously, South Africa took a lot of flack at the beginning of this World Cup, coming into the tournament with no form whatsoever. They also took a lot of flack because they lost to Japan. So you wouldn't be called pessimistic to say that this team doesn't deserve a hell of a lot. But they've clawed their way back. And Damien de Allender, of course, he didn't play in the opening game, but he played ever since. He leads the list of defenders beaten with 18, which is a really good thing. So it's just going away from the old, dull, boring South African rugby of running into players. Here's a guy who's really leading the charge of trying to beat players. 18, that tops the list. Mike Brown, the outspoken English fullback we just spoke about. Yeah, 17. And then Nehe Mulner-Scudder and Nemanja Nadolo. Nadolo, of course, the big Fijian wing. There was 16 each. When it comes to clean breaks, Anthony Watson from England. So England do have the players, as you can see. They're doing well, these attacking stats. Anthony Watson with 11 clean breaks, followed by Ben Smith and Talusa Vianu. They're 8 each, along with Mulner-Scudder, Mike Brown, Brian Abana, and Juan Imhoff, all on 8 clean breaks. Look out for the name Juan Imhoff. He's, of course, the guy who scored a hat-trick against South Africa in the Rugby Championship. He's doing pretty well in this tournament, too. When it comes to tackles, well, these are the guys who are often on losing causes. You know, when you're under huge, huge amounts of pressure and stress, you've got to tackle your heart out. And that's exactly what Santiago Villaseca, Sorry, a bit tongue-tied here. Santiago Vilaseca, 53. Francisco Minto and Torsten van Jaarsveld. They were 52 tackles each. And then Lothar Jago hasn't played every minute of this World Cup yet, but there he is, 50 tackles. Now, if you are the size that Lothar Jago is and you're putting in 50 tackles, you are playing, well, pick a saying, out of your boots, above your weight, everything and everything. Incredible, incredible effort so far from Lothar Jago, which does then beg the question. Victor Matfield, still not 100% with the hamstring. Going to this weekend, well, we have to wait and see. But Lothar Jago, if he starts, I think South Africa are only the better off for it. Because, yes, Victor will do a huge amount, to say, in the captaincy leadership role, directing the set pieces. But when you've got a guy who's out-tackling you, well, you know, Victor's stats have been pretty good too. But there's a guy, when Lothar Jago tackles you, there's not a very good chance you're going to go forward or offload. So all things for Hanne Kamara to consider going into the quarterfinals. Into the teams now. Now, which teams are really looking good? Well, you'll be expect the ones that are in the quarterfinals. Those are the ones that are going to snap up on our list here. Most tries to the tournament so far. No surprise, New Zealand, much weaker pool than the rest and a much stronger team than the rest. They have scored 25 tries. Second place is South Africa on 23, Argentina on 22, and then we've got Australia on 17 and Ireland on 16. Ireland had took a lot of flack about not scoring many tries going into this World Cup. Of course, they've got a very resolute defense, but tries aren't something that come that naturally. But there we go. Fifth place, which is pretty good considering they had they had France and Italy. Those are your two tough teams, so maybe they could have actually done better. Defenders beaten, we've got Argentina right on top there, 136. Then we've got a bit of a gap with South Africa in second, 114 defenders beaten. And then third, England, 109 defenders beaten. You just got to wonder about this English team. They had so much going forward. They actually weren't that bad. But yeah, obviously just not a good enough structure, leaky defense. New Zealand, they have 106 defenders beaten. And then surprisingly, fifth place, Georgia with 100 defenders beaten. Those plucky Georgians. Clean breaks. Argentina topped this one again. 46 clean breaks. New Zealand 42. 38 for South Africa. 36 for England. And 5 for Australia. Sorry, fifth place, 31 for Australia. So that's your clean breaks. On to points. Argentina are top in that one, 179. And then New Zealand, 174. South Africa, 171. Australia, 141. And Scotland, 136. You want to know who made the most tackles? Well, if we can take all those stats together, yes, Scotland. They were in some pretty tough battles. 582 tackles amongst them. And then we've got Samoa third, Georgia 5-1-2 in fourth, and the USA in 5-0-3. So you can draw a lot of stats into all these things, or you can just look at the scoreboard. All depends on you. There are some pretty interesting stats, and we'll chat to Keith about those a little bit more as well. But if you want to pick up all the stats, the tool that I use is the Vodacom Rugby Stats app. You get on your tablet, you get on your phone. It's all very, very basic. Go on to the categories. You get team, you get players, you get team versus team, which we're going to touch on a bit now. So if you want to become slightly sharper with your rugby knowledge, that app is a real, real plus. Okay, so we've got on to Keith now. Now, sorry if I feel a bit rushed today. We have one guest short. It's just running out of fresh voices for you. Of course, the idea is that every week we provide fresh insights, not just the tried and tested, because that's what rugby is. It should be an interesting place to be, especially with the World Cup time. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the thoughts of Stuart Lancaster, and then we're going to get Keith straight after this. Play it.
Stuart, could you say how moved you were by the levels of support England got tonight from this crowd in Manchester?
Yeah, I mean, I made the point in an earlier interview. The even from just getting off the bus to the game, and I thought for the boys at the end, you know, their reaction was fantastic. You know, it's been a real tough week, and the boys have hurting, and I thought the reaction was fantastic, really, because it's given them a huge lift and, you know, confidence to know that the country's still behind them, which is important, obviously, going forward.
And was that just the way, after that tough week, you wanted the boys to sign off and the way you wanted England to be remembered at this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, that was the point I made, you know, about the memory being the one that lasts, and, you know, the memory of this game and the performance and some of the tries we scored was exactly what they wanted to sign off. You know, we scored 4 tries against Fiji. No one's done that. In the tournament, we've scored some really good tries in the lead up to it. In the Wales game, obviously, with 22-10 up, 12 up. So, you know, we've not been far away, but obviously we're not going through the quarters, which still hurts.
Obviously
I am the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Welcome back to Rugby Central. It is a lovely Monday morning. Not so lovely if you are English, but of course, just nice to hear the thoughts of Stuart Lancaster around the fact that his team wasn't exactly booed or had rotten fruit thrown at them. They still have a support base, and people are still quite sympathetic towards them. But to join us from England is Keith Moore. Keith, you with us?
I am. Morning, Ben. How are you doing?
Yeah, super. Thanks. Now, Keith, I wanted to, for this Rugby Central idea, I was chatting to Gareth about what you want to do during the World Cup and just give like a one-hour podcast to kind of give everyone a little marker as where to be. And you were definitely a guest that I really wanted to get on, not just because you're from England, or sorry, you're living in England right now, but I have enjoyed your views as a fellow blogger over the time. Now, just tell us about the current vibe in England. Is it very, very deflating, or is it more just the fact that people have got over it already?
Yeah, I think a little mixture of both. I think it is quite deflated, unfortunately. You know, there is a World Cup to carry on with, but unfortunately the autopsy of England rugby has started as of this morning. The guys are the England fans have been feeling a bit flat recently, as you can imagine, and I think it was probably made a bit worse the fact that they had to go out and play a Uruguay game when that would have been the last thing they wanted to do or watch, and you know, it was a lose-lose situation for England. So hopefully the guys get back up for it, you know, the rest of the country, the rest of the UK. But yeah, at the moment it does seem a bit flat, yeah.
Okay, well, inevitable question. Is Stuart Lancaster going to keep his job?
I don't think so. I think if you listen to the way he talks, he talks about, just listening to them now, he says they and them when he's talking about the team rather than us and we. And I think he's already realized that his time is up. And unfortunately, the guys who are running the show, you know, maybe look like they've got a bit of egg on their faces with their selection of Lancaster ahead of a few guys who were potentially more qualified for the job back in 2012. But I can't see him carrying on. There's talk that he may offer his resignation. I don't know, but I think they might take the job away from him from now.
Well, I heard a little rumor. We'll get to the World Cup proper, but I just think this is something we should address first up. I heard a rumor that it's probably in his best interest to kind of stay on as like a talent development kind of guy and take on that sort of role within the structure. But again, like, would he be good for that, seeing as he thought he had the right talent going to this World Cup in the last 4 years?
Yeah, I think for me personally, he's been a good manager, but his selections have been questionable at best. That game against Australia, you know, you're selecting Chris Robshaw at seven, which was something he'd been doing for a few years, admittedly, but his selections have been possibly the worst thing that he's brought to the job. I do also think with England sport in general, you know, they're very quick to get rid of a regime once it goes wrong. They don't really look to sort of maybe fix it or whatever, but there's going to be a lot of unraveling over the week or so, at least the next 2-3 weeks. And, you know, rumors are flying around about all sorts of stuff to do with Sam Burgess and what he was promised in coming in. But again, just rumors. But yeah, I think there will be enough sort of stuff for them to dust under the carpet that they'll eventually say, look, it's not worth it, and just move on from him.
Yeah, and it gets pretty tough from there because they do have a tour of Australia to look forward to as well, which is something you don't really want to do with who knows in your group. Now, of course, from what we'll understand of Lancaster is that he was a guy that had, like, you got to think for English job, you got lots of resources, you got a lot of support, obviously you got a lot of money. You've got, they keep saying it, but I don't think it's a relative stat, but they've got the most registered professional rugby players in the world. All amounts to no Six Nations wins. Second doesn't quite cut it. And then, of course, this World Cup thing. People always allude back to the fact that Clive Woodward as well, you know, he got 8 years. He was given a lot of faith and he was quite eccentric and he had this huge, like, backup staff. But I think he was like maybe a once in a generation kind of guy. I don't think Lancaster can ever be put in the same group as him.
No, I wouldn't say so. And you listen to the two of them talk, and Lancaster talks a lot more about emotion, whereas Woodward talks a lot more about the actual technical side of rugby. And I think that's probably Lancaster's shortfall. You know, he's a good man manager, as I said earlier, but his ability to break down other teams really doesn't come down to much. And his, he talked there, again, that quote that just came on now, about how they were the only team to score that many tries against Fiji, and they came close and this and that. I think you're looking at missed opportunities that his...
Duncan, we
seem to have learned.
Sorry, Keith, you just broke up there for a second.
Just saying, he's been saying for the last few weeks that he's been learning from mistakes, but they clearly haven't, and if they have been learning, they haven't been implementing on the field. So, yeah, I don't think that he has the technical know-how to do it, and whether or not Andy Farrell, Rountree, and Mike Catt did, I don't know. Whether they'll go with him, I don't know, but I think they've been shown up technically, and for a long time that's been the case.
Yeah, okay, well, just final question to draw a line into this. Do you reckon that England will go foreign, coach-wise?
Oh, not with the current. So there's been talk about Dean Ryan, and a few other guys have asked for the entire RFU to be audited, never mind the coaching staff. And wow. And as long as the RFU aren't, as long as those guys, Rob Andrew and them, are still in their job, I don't see them bringing in a foreigner, no.
Yeah, well, they've got such a hard and fast player policy. If you look at,
exactly.
You know, if you don't play in England, you're not going to make a team. Like, Keith, I just want to run through the pools for you. I thought it'd be interesting to go through the stats to see who's been really shining in the pool stages. Now, you can't draw a lot from stats because sometimes, you know, they're quite skewed with opposition put out. I mean, if you just look at what happened with SA in their pool, you know, it's one thing playing weaker teams, but when weaker teams field weaker teams, you know, that like USA were saving themselves, Scotland were saving themselves. So, yeah, maybe we shouldn't look too much into Brian Evanna's line breaks, for instance. But to look like a sort of... sort of outward kind of viewpoint. Pool A, it was always going to be the pool of death. What do we really learn from the teams that have gone through here, Australia and Wales?
Australia probably less so. I think Wales have shown a lot of their team, the team dynamic, the closeness of that squad has shone through. Now, they haven't been the most flash side and whatnot, but in terms of how they've been able to adapt when things have gone wrong, they've been the best. And we've got a guy, John Davies, who does a column for us, and he was saying that in that England game, how he felt it was won by Wales was the superior fitness, because he said the decision making was easier when you know, when you're fit and fatigue's not setting in as much, your decision making's better. So their fitness, they're well drilled, and they really do fight. I know it's a cliche, but they fight for each other, and that's only going to get you so far. But it got them out the pool, and I suppose, as they say, again another cliche, it's anyone's game. But I feel we learned that about Wales, who, you know, they lost. They were one of the form teams going into the Six Nations, and they lost to England at Cardiff after leading quite handsomely at halftime. And, you know, people were asking questions of them, and I think they've answered those. Australia, they've been such a weird team to watch because, you know, they sort of didn't really do anything much against Fiji. They flew under the radar. Then they came up against England and absolutely blew them away, I felt, although England maybe made them look good. But then against Wales, again, they failed to score any tries. But their defense was incredible. So I think Australia are proving themselves to be a very sort of streetwise side, and they'll sort of do what it takes. But Wales, more importantly, you know, given that we're going to have to play in the quarterfinals, they're the ones that I worry about just because of how hard they work.
And, of course, Australia found a scrum somewhere en route from Sydney to London, which is also hugely impressive. But no, look, if you look at the way the pool is from a South African perspective, we're not going to really touch Australia until the finals, I would say, if and when they both do make it. Wales have been an interesting thing, though, because they're obviously dogged by terrible injuries. But as much as people like to hate him, Warwick Gatland, there's another guy. He's been the coach there for a long time. Very, very rugby astute guy, obviously New Zealander. So he's bringing something different to the mix. He's shown that a little bit of street smarts, a little bit of this and that, can actually really make a team despite the resources being on the wane. But then came Saturday's game, and I agree with you wholeheartedly about the fact that the Welsh have adapted. That last 20 against England was amazing. But I think it will stick with them how numerical advantage times two players, and they could not get through that defense. It didn't look like they were trying anything. They were pick and going, which was obviously going to draw defenders in, but you pick and go to make space, and the space was never used. So it's an interesting thing to kind of look at as far as if South Africa looked at the best outcome, Wales in the quarters with injuries for sure. Take it any day, but still hardly a pushover, because Dan Bigger, we know he's a great fly-off, and those guys play so well to the breakdown. You know, it's getting back to all these things. They play for each other. They're very passionate and hugely fit. So people are saying Box to easily win that one. I think Mark Keohane went as far as say it'll be an easy 10-point win at least. Well, I think Heineken Mayer takes really big wins, and he whittles them down to tightly close.
He likes to keep the viewership high with tense finishes. I worry about us against Wales, for the reasons you've outlined. I worry about complacency more than anything else. That's our biggest threat right now. I don't think Wales are as big a threat as complacency.
Well, speaking of complacency, let's go straight into Pool B then. South Africa did come away with the victory there, and then Scotland joined them. So, look, I think this is a very sort of open-shut case as far as discussion. Scotland made it by being the best of the worst, so to speak. They're so battered off that Samoa game. They're not going to offer much to Australia. Springboks, on the other hand, well, you know, it's do we do this, do we do that? Very unsettled. Still looking okay, though. What do you reckon is the only downfall is going with South Africa right now? Because we all know that if they play their game and they just blick some oaks, they're still going to be decent. And if Pollard can kick, we can still probably win it. But what for you are the fundamentals still, out to jury right now?
Well, I think one of my issues with Heineken May in recent times is his the way he rushes players back into a team. I think our lock pairing with Itzebeth and Diakha has been an absolute revelation, and it's been so good to watch them play together. I would really not be too happy if Victor Matfield sort of got parachuted back into that team, because I think those two are playing really well. Farid Depre's leadership, he sort of was maybe some people thought he was a bit left field in the selection of him to lead the team. But I went to the Scotland game and I went to the USA game, and what I said to people afterwards, you know, there were things that maybe from a rugby perspective we didn't execute properly. But the way that the leaders of that team pulled everyone together at every single stoppage and play, and they called each other and said, what are we going to do now? What's next? And we're talking about when you're 30, 35 points up against America, and they're still saying, right, what's the plan? Where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. The leadership has stepped up, and it was missing. You know, you watched that Japan game. Whenever they'd scored a try, the guys were just standing there watching the conversion. There was no conversations. When Scotland scored against us, we had the momentum. Everyone was called in. Okay, guys, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? This is how we're going to do the kickoff. It was all communication, all on board, and everyone doing the same thing. So from that perspective, I'm very happy with the way the team looks at the moment. And I think that Japan loss, as terrible as it was at the time, couldn't have come at a better time. It's galvanized their team and given it a sort of a rudder where it potentially was missing for me.
Yeah, well, yeah. We try not to dwell too much on the Japan loss. I mean, obviously you weren't living in the place where it happened, well, where the aftershocks really, really went through. I mean, I think the next day I went to Pick and Pay to go do like a weekly shop, and even that was quiet. Like there was less people, and there's a couple of dejected people walking around hungover in their Bok jerseys. But that game, that game was a good game. Just getting back to the Victor Matfield thing, if you look at the unit, it's one thing saying Victor should come in as number five lock because he'll do this, but it's also just looking at units and where how people play together. You know, it almost seems like Etzebeth and Diago, they kind of spur each other on. There's that massive physical element. I mean, Diago's made 50 tackles this tournament. There's a guy who really does deserve his place, and he's working for it the whole time. Victor, as a leader, sure, but it's not like we don't have any other leaders. And as you say, it's like if they can do it without him, I don't think he should be put back in, especially if he's got a hamstring that's, well, let's just say maybe isn't going to get the best price on the classifieds right now. He's not going to be the best.
I worry about him as a player. I don't think he works as hard as someone like Etzebeth, someone like Diakha. And I know he's got leadership, and I know they say this is the point in the competition where it sort of matters the most or means the most. But for me, it's, those guys are playing so well. They're young and they're hungry and they really want to go out there and play. And they're taking in, if you watch that Scotland game again, how much ball the loose forwards and the tight five took up. It's just Victor Matfield with 38 is potentially a bit much to ask of his body. And I know he's been in the paper saying I'll do whatever it takes to help out the squad. And I think at this point, maybe off the bench, potentially, possibly. But the other games that we've lost this year, when we were up against the Wallabies by 7-10 points with 10 minutes to go, we were up against the All Blacks. We kept losing at the end. And whether that's fitness, whether that's another issue, but if the leadership is so important, then why aren't those leaders guiding us to wins when it matters the most? Because once you're at the World Cup, it's done. You're talking about for another 4 years, and those guys, the younger guys, are the ones who are going to learn from that. So I'm a big advocate for youth. I'm a big advocate for giving guys a go, and especially when they're playing as well as, I mean, Lewitt is just picking up Man of the Match awards wherever he goes throughout England, and you've got to play him, and Etzebeth as well for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I still believe this. People always say an impact player must be on the bench to make an impact. That's why you can't have Victor there, because he's not a physical impact. but there's also the calming aspect of leadership in the last 20. I mean, just losses take into that. So a quick look at Pool C. Time's flying here. Pool C, okay, Argentina, New Zealand, those were always going to be the two teams going through, and it was always going to be sort of a slight chance that Argentina could have an upset in that first match. Wasn't to be. It's been done and dusted ever since. Big key talking points from New Zealand's point of view, have we seen enough to even make any sort of assessments?
Well, I mean, again, this is the old question. Is Steve Hansen just keeping his cards close to his chest? Yeah, New Zealand haven't really done much, but at the same time, they've done enough, just like the Springboks. Yeah, they haven't necessarily been the best team that we know they can be, but look where they are. They're sitting pretty top their pool and did what was necessary. I don't think you can look too much into a game against Namibia. There's a lot of disruption, stuff like that. I still consider them the favourites. Well, they're more Australia for me at this point. But, I think Argentina are a much better side than people give them credit for, and they did push New Zealand pretty hard. But, I don't think the All Blacks will be too concerned about, you know, the stats against Georgia and Namibia because the important thing is they got to where they want to be, top of Pool C, and then they'll just sort of look forward from here.
Okay, most likely backline. Obviously, we've got Aaron Smith, Dan Carter, those two cast in stone. What do you reckon is going to happen with the centres? Is Sonny Bill going to start?
Well, I think he will. You know, it's funny how quickly guys sort of find form. At the end of last year, maybe Sonny Bill was unquestionably the starting centre. Nonu this year has just been awesome. But then suddenly at the World Cup, Sonny Bill has just come out again. And I think based on form, you know, Hansen's never been scared. He's not one for sentiment. And I know Nonu's just got his 100 tests or whatever. But for me, Sonny Bill's the form player. And I would definitely see him starting against France for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Milner Scudder or Naholo?
I'm a big fan of Milner Scudder. I just think the things that he can do in short spaces and small spaces is incredible. And, you know, if you look at a few guys like Kirtley Beale, the Aussies and the Kiwis like to implement a winger who can come in at first receiver when the ball's out wide. And it's normally a sort of fast-stepping guy. And a guy like Kirtley Beale or Milner Scudder taking first receiver ball, it just keeps defenses guessing. I'm a big fan of what he offers that team. And I know there's a lot of guys who would say Naholo is a try-scoring machine, but I do think the variety that Milner-Scudder offers is I'd pick him based on that alone.
Well, I totally agree with you, especially if you look at, you know, obviously all the comparisons going back to 2007 when France beat the All Blacks, and the All Blacks were just trying so hard at their line for so long in their second half. You know, there was never anyone to break it. I think Luke McAllister was flying off that day. They had... Aaron Major was still playing, and they just couldn't do it. You got a guy like Sonny Bill who could do something, get an offload to Milner Scudder, suddenly you can manufacture a try. So I'd go exactly with you on that. Quickly into Pool D. France. Is there anything to worry about here?
Say again, sorry, you broke up there?
France. Is there anything to really worry about here other than the fact that they have this reputation of being unpredictable, which is so hard to give credence to, but at the same time you can't ignore it?
Yeah, I think you can ignore it a bit more these days. They really haven't brought up much. You know, they always talked about this week being the big week, and they looked unconvincing as Romania. They said, yeah, but here we go, we got Ireland. And a lot of their players looked in that game, especially at the breakdown. They looked like they sort of found out about the game 45 minutes before it started. They didn't seem to know what they were doing or what the plan was, and they didn't seem to really know what the Irish, you know, what the Irish were going to offer. And at that breakdown with the centres they'd picked, you knew they were going to hit hard in that midfield and then get go forward ball for those, you know, the flankers to get involved in the breakdown. But there just didn't seem to be that cohesion. I know that everyone's talking it up and they're saying, well, the Kiwis playing against France in Cardiff 2007, I think those demons will be put to bed within the first 20 minutes of that game, to be honest. I don't think France offer very much at all.
Easily, I think it's, you know, their local league is so strong, but it's strong with guys like Matt Gitto and all South Africans. Yeah, I totally agree. I think the one thing from Pool D is that, yes, Ireland deserved to finish top their Six Nations champs the last 2 years. But again, you know, if losing Paul O'Connell obviously is a big deal, but losing Sexton as well, sure, you can get the replacement players and they came in. And because they're coming in and they know what the job is in that moment, great. But now if they've got to prepare an entire week knowing they've got to now beat Argentina, so much pressure on them, I think it's a hell of a lot tougher. And I'm going to go as far as to say I think Argentina can pip them this weekend.
Yeah, I think that's a very good shot. And I would say that's, for me, that's the closest of all of them. If you'd looked at it before the World Cup, you might not have thought so. But with those injuries, and I don't know if you know, but about 10 minutes ago, it was confirmed that Peter Mahoney is out for the World Cup. And yeah, it looks like O'Connell, as you said. So there's some big players.
That's their number six.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So he's out. He's confirmed as out. And the one thing for Ireland was always going to be depth. You know, they're a well-drilled side. They're very motivated, and they know their jobs Joe Schmidt is big on guys knowing their jobs and what they need to do. But now you've got a sort of a few guys coming in that haven't really been in the setup, haven't won those Six Nations with the team. And I think they're ripe for the picking. Argentina and playing some good rugby, and that could be a very big scare for Ireland there.
Cool, Keith. Well, thank you so much for your time. We have run on a little bit further than I was expecting. But again, just getting your insights is always absolutely priceless. Where can we find more of you on the internet throughout the World Cup?
Well, I've just I've been working for Sky Sports at the moment, so all the stuff's going to go on there. I'll be doing a few features. I had a chat with Andre Sleiman recently. So, it's all full-time there, and been lucky enough to go to the games through them. So if anyone's following Sky Sports or follow me on Twitter, then you can see all the work from there.
Fantastic. I will include your Twitter handle on the podcast when I tweet it out later. Keith, thanks so much, and hopefully the weather stays good and the beer stay cold. You can really enjoy a South African victory in the end. It's a massive long shot. It's a massive long shot, but you'll be a hero in the workplace after that.
I hope so. Thanks so much, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Cool. Thanks, Keith.
Cheers, sir.
All right. So that's Keith Moore. And I think it's always great to get a guest who I agree with totally. Jeez, things fly, hey, Duncan? Look at that. 15 minutes to go. Right, so there we have just what happened from the pools. I think it was such an interesting sort of three, four weeks of rugby in that, sure, there was a lot that went to script, but a couple of real, real attractions. But now we get to the quarterfinals, and this is what we're going to wrap up for this week. We're going to go through, we're going to go through the matches. So what we need to look out for, because just a few days away now, and as I said, maybe Japan to replace Scotland. Otherwise, these are the best quarterfinals, I think. I wouldn't choose anyone else over these ones. So before we get into that, let's just get the thoughts of Philippe Saint-André. He is the French coach, and here's him fielding a question which we're all kind of thinking about.
Who would you have rather played in the quarterfinal, the All Blacks or Argentina? And was there any element of bluffing tonight?
We did in purpose, you know, to play New Zealand. So today, you know, Ireland deserved to win. So now we don't have the choice, you know. So we'll play New Zealand, and we know it's a tough game, but we are not out of the competition. So we need to stick together, put the spirit back, and perform much, much, much better than we did today.
Well, they did not perform very good yesterday. As Keith said, it looked like a team that had been told about the game about half an hour before. They just didn't seem to offer much cohesion. That Scott Spedding looked quite decent from the back, and he kicked the ball very hard. But outside of that, what do the Frenchies really have? You know, it always goes back to reputation with them. It's like, oh, well, you never know, and you know, they've hurt New Zealand before. Yes, of course, they made the finals last time, going down narrowly 8-7 to the All Blacks at Eden Park. I was there that day. It was the coldest it's ever been in my whole life, and what a nervy finish that was. But France is going backwards. They have been going backwards for a few years now, so don't get too worried about that. But first, before we get into their anticipated match against the All Blacks, let's look at the first semi-final. That is Saturday at 5 o'clock South African time. All the times I'll be giving you right now are South African times. SA versus Wales. Now, the last time these two teams played, Wales won that one 12-6. And if you look at the games prior to that, you remember Warren Gatland was so close to getting that first Welsh win in South Africa. It came down to a penalty try in the death when someone tried to decapitate Cornel Hendricks. So these guys are really happy pushing us in the last sort of year or so. So if you just look at go through the stats again. If you look at the two teams in comparison, one was in a pretty easy pool, other one was in a very tough pool. Not too much as drawn to the stats in the back of that. They're very, very similar, very evenly matched. And if anything, well, maybe some more missed tackles for the Welsh, but of course, much more pressure there. 65 missed tackles to the box, 48, but they were being tested in every single match, essentially. Points, 171 points for the box, 111 for the Welsh. Discipline, pretty good. No red cards. There's been a few yellows here and there. But to look into it, this is the prime example of, does it pay to have a tough run into the quarterfinals so you're really match fit and hardened? Or if you can keep the players relatively fresh and have decent runouts. South Africa had the decent runouts. The Welsh have been battered and bruised for the last sort of 3 weeks. They've also had the injuries. So Wales haven't got the first choice fullback. We all know that. Halfpenny barred out before the tournament started. Scrum off as well. Forward pack's still pretty decent. You've got Sam Warburton, who I think is a fantastic leader. He really, really is quite something. You've got I think Tuparik is the name of the other flank. All these guys play so well to the ball. And the key for winning a World Cup is scrum well, boss the breakdown, kick your points. Dan Bigger, fantastic kick. He's missed one kick this entire World Cup. The big key issue here is, I think, South Africa has more depth, they're a lot fresher, and I think they can make more of an impact off the bench. These are key aspects when it comes to tight matches. So, cock on block here with a little prediction, which I will give you all the games here. I say SA are going to beat Wales by 6 points. It's going to be very tough. I don't think there'll be too many tries. I think both teams will be looking to size each other because it'll be so cautious, safety first. The Welsh, if they had two or three more players, I reckon they'd be definite favourites for this one. They've done so well, and they've got a really, really intelligent game. And as Keith said, these guys really adapt well to challenges, and they're super fit. They trained in the Arctic. They trained in the desert. They basically trained where those guys were making the stadiums and dying in Qatar or Doha or wherever it was. So these guys are hard ass. They really, really are hard. But I think it's just one game too much. A lot was taken out of them in beating England, and it was a fine win. And I think a lot was taken out against Australia. Again, this is a team that couldn't get over the line when there was only 13 people defending it. So I think they are a little bit drained. And to pick it up again this week, maybe a game too far. Saturday, 9 o'clock. That'll be France versus New Zealand. So what you'll find from people this week is they'll try whatever they can to draw parallels between 2007 and now. Of course, in 2007, these two teams met in the quarterfinals. It was in Cardiff. And a few forward passes here and there, some dodgy referee decisions. And before you knew it, All Blacks were out of the World Cup. Now, back in 1999, France also absolutely blitzed New Zealand after trailing early on. So they knocked them out of the World Cup there. And this has all happened in the same place in England, the great United Kingdom. But so much has happened since then. New Zealand have become world champs. They've really dominated the modern game. They've really evolved rugby. And France have gone nothing but backwards. Sure, they've got Thierry Desautoirs, who probably has the best name in rugby, also one of the greatest open side flankers or loose forwards, but they just haven't got enough going for them. I think Freddie Michalak is a desperate choice. I think he was on the way out when he played for the Sharks a few years ago, and there's just no cohesion. Yes, they've got talented players, but I don't think France are going to offer much as far as New Zealand's concerned. This could actually just be a runaway victory for the All Blacks. It's a team that hasn't really been tested yet, but you know they've got all the firepower in the world. Just going through that back line as I was with Keith just now, I don't see any team that's really going to be able to stop them for 80 minutes in this World Cup. Look, it's hardly an insightful thing to say. I think everyone knew that from the start. It'll take an absolute best effort from a team like, say, Australia, South Africa, or maybe Ireland. Otherwise, I don't think a single team is going to match New Zealand when it really comes to crunch after 80 minutes. That brings us to Sunday's matches. Now, if my predictions go right there, let's just say New Zealand are going to win that one by 16. That would then mean SA plays New Zealand in the top half semi-final. Again, I think we all called this the beginning of the tournament. It's starting to play out on that. But that's if Wales and France both lose, which I think they will. Sunday's matches, 2 o'clock on Sunday, slightly earlier start here. Ireland play Argentina. Now, this is going to be, and again, Keith agreed with me, I reckon this is going to be the tightest of all the games here. SA versus Wales will be tight score-wise, but I think South Africa will have the wood on them. It's just that they like to make things tighter than it is. Ireland, as you just heard, they've lost the flank. They've lost their inspirational captain, and Johnny Sexton is doubtful. So with those replacements coming in, now having to prepare for a pretty rampant Argentine side, I don't see them doing this. There's so much pressure on these guys. This is the year that they were going to finally do well in the World Cup. But Argentina, they've come through a pretty decent group in that they had the test against the All Blacks. They did very well. They definitely ticked a lot of boxes there. They've then just been running their game, and they've had a lot of freedom and have developed a lot of confidence going into this quarterfinal. They've got a great scrum. They man the breakdowns pretty well, and kicking game's always been strong from the Argentine side. Ireland, I think you're going to bow out, and I'm going to make that call. It's a tough one to make because defending Six Nations champs the last 2 years. These guys look good. They absolutely obliterated France last night, although France didn't look too bothered. Going to go Argentina by 4 in that one. Okay. Duncan informs me we've got a caller. So before we get to the Australia versus Scotland match, Duncan? Justin?
Oh, hello?
Justin, who called it?
Hello?
Yeah, hello. I can hear you.
How's it, Brit? It's Justin here. Ben, how are you, Brit?
Yeah, Justin, solid, bud. Carry on.
What do you reckon the starting lineup's going to be for Booker, eh? Because, yes, I'm going to be quite pissed if all the picks is going to come back into the lineup. I think freaking Homo Naledi's hamstrings are stronger than this.
Well, there's been talk that they actually try to take Homo Naledi's hamstrings and actually transplant them into Victor. Look, I think it's always going to happen. Heineke's got his favourites, and Victor's going to be in the team, so I don't think we should even worry about that. It's unfortunate, but it's going to happen.
But listen, I think the biggest threat for Wales is Dan Digger. How are we going to nullify that oak?
Yeah, she's... Look, Justin, I think when it comes down to it, they're going to need a bit more than just a kicking fly off. I think they just don't have ways of scoring too many tries post that. I mean, George North having to play in the centre is a big worry for them. It's not his preferred position. And I reckon Pollard's been so good on defence. I mean, he's a big boykey, and he tackles bloody well. I think that's been the big edge. People say Lambie should be in, but Hany Khumeier knows when it comes to games like this, a guy like Pollard can match bigger in every single possible way and probably overpower him.
And he's Andre's kicking. He's missed a few kicks. I know he's got better, but in these knockout games, we need a pretty much 100% kicking record. So maybe bring Mona Stein in on the bench, or you put Lambie on the bench.
Yeah, I think Hany Khumeier will be tried that. But I mean, Mona wasn't flash in the game against the USA. He came out, I think, he got 1 out of 3. And that's a game with no pressure.
Yeah, right. And then in the centres, Jesse, he's battling. Defensive-wise, you know, he's getting bumped off so often. And on attack, you know, you heard Nick Mallett. He just tucks it under his arm and tries to run into a wall. So don't you reckon Jan should have a bit of a crack here, you know?
Yeah, look, it wouldn't be completely unseen for Hany Khumeier to go with that. He's often played two inside centres at centre. But, you know, you've got to look at the viewer figures. Jesse's abs in those tight shirts, I think he'll always go through. Commercial, rugby's about commercial aspect as well, huh?
Yeah.
Justin, that's all the time we've got left. Any other contentious selections you want to quickly run past?
Sorry?
Any other contentious selection issues that we should worry about?
Yeah, listen, I think the beast is looking a bit jaded. Old Trevor gets a go, but, you know, obviously you're going to say experience in these knockout games, but Trevor needs a go, eh?
I reckon what they should do is say, Beast, give me 40 minutes of your life and we'll take it from there, and incentivize the guy to really come out firing. And, you know, Trevor...
Absolutely.
I think that's the plan. Justin, thanks so much for your call, bud. I'm going to have to catch you up there. All right, okay. Nice one, man. And then, yeah, final game quickly. We've got to wrap it up. Australia versus Scotland. Not a chance Scotland are going to win this one. Haven't got the team. They've been battered and bruised. Aussies looking really good. Look for the Aussies to win that one by 20+. That is everything you need to know. If you haven't got everything live, catch the podcast at cliffcentral.com and look out for more tweets at Follow the Bounce. I'll give you all the details. Thanks so much for joining me today. And go Boca. Beating Wales, and then from there, the real fun starts. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is cliffcentral.com.